Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albracht and Tommy Kester.
Welcome in, everybody. Happy Thursday to you on Sports Daily here. Jacob Albracht alongside Tommy Kester, Chad Chambers producing this bad boy for us. It is your time to shine. The IHOP hotline is open, 869-1240. You can have that number to call. You can also get in touch with the program lots of different ways. You can leave us comments on our video streams. We come to you live on 12 News Plus Connected. Glad to be there. Facebook, YouTube, X. You can leave us comments. You can leave us voice messages on the Odyssey app if you're listening live to us right now. We'd invite you to listen live or in the archives on the Odyssey app. But you can leave a voicemail there. Lots of different ways to get in touch with the program. Thursday's always big this time of year. We'll have our K-State insider Tim Fitzgerald on about 10 o'clock to talk about the Cats opening up Big 12 play at BYU. And then we'll have our betting expert, PJ Glasser, in. Try to recover from a tough week, I think, across the universe in the betting world last week. We'll see how PJ did and get his take on a week. Sometimes the pendulum swings hard. I'm curious to get his take on what's been a wild, wild, really college and NFL season. Very unpredictable. But we'll get into that as well as we make our way through. The Royals, certainly top of mind. Is that magic number? After a series head-to-head with Detroit, does not change. It remains at 8 now with 9 games to go, which is worrisome. How worrisome? We'll get into that throughout the show today as well. We'll give away a little HTO later in the show, so stay tuned for your opportunity to win that. Quick shout-out to Prairie Fire Coffee for keeping us fueled up each and every morning with some great coffee at the KFH studios. Tommy, good morning. How are you?
Man, I'm okay. I kept thinking last night as I was watching the Royals game, you know, you mentioned the magic number. It doesn't really seem very magic right now. So I shudder every time I think about that as we're getting down to the wire. And it's going to be a fairly tense race to the finish, I believe.
Yeah, I think it is, too. And we'll spend some time early in the show on that. It's been a stressful series. It's been stressful. I feel a little stressed, Tommy. We had to say goodbye to the family cat yesterday.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear about that.
But it's crazy. It's very strange now with kids. I mean, losing a pet always sucks, right? And you know, I feel for anybody who loses a pet. It's the worst. It's not the worst, but it's really, 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 really bad. It sucks. It's really bad with kids. Like, I don't know how to, like, you know, we're having breakfast this morning and one of my kids is just holding the collar with like tears in her, not like sobbing or crying, just like, man, like you go through that. And so, you know, we've had that, this Royals series, stressful. Like it is stressful because these are close games. Like they're one run games. It's not like the Royals are playing poorly. So a day off is going to be a nice thing, right? A day off, a time to catch a breath, you know, do all those things. Just in general is going to feel nice. This is what you invite with good baseball though, Tommy. Like this is it. This is what you bring to the table when you know you're going to be in the middle of a playoff chase.
Yeah. The name of the game, especially last night's game and the night before against the Tigers, was the Royals' inability to capitalize, their failure to capitalize. They hit into probably more double plays in the last two games than maybe they have the entire season. It's been wildly frustrating to get runners aboard and then not be able to bring them home. That happened multiple times in last night's game. You know, Alec Marsh got chased early. He didn't have a particularly good start, but credit goes to Daniel Lynch. I mean, he hung in there and he kept the Royals in the ball game basically the rest of the way. I know that at that point the Royals are down and then they've got, you know, to try to come back from that. And that was, you know, easier said than done, and ultimately not what they were able to do. But it wasn't like they were ever really out of it, and that credit goes to Daniel Lynch. The offense just couldn't get anything going to bring runs home, and that was the same thing the night before. So they've got to get that part of it figured out, because outside of, yeah, Alec Marsh didn't have a great game, you know, at least yesterday, Daniel Lynch and the bullpen, they did, and they kept the Royals into the ballgame.
Yeah, it's... I mean, look, there have been times this season where the Royals have been flat playing poorly, right? It's happened a few times. This isn't one of those times. At least it doesn't seem like it is to me. They could be a little better offensively, But they're going to have to figure that out, because without Vinny Pasquantino, this just isn't the same offense. And I don't know if he can return, but I don't think you count on it by any means. So it's going to take, you know, Bobby Witt Jr. and Salvador Perez shouldering a lot of the load here. And you hope guys like Tommy Pham can help that. But yeah, they're going to have to pitch their way into any sort of run that they make. I mean, make no bones about it. Like, the Royals will have to have the best starting pitching, I think, if they want to make a postseason run. And I say that they're fully capable of doing that, right? Like, that's been the strength of this team all the way through. And in a postseason series, that shrinks down to a four-man rotation. I mean, I'd challenge anybody to give me a better four-man rotation right now in baseball, top to bottom, through the first four in that rotation. And so, I don't know what Lorenzen's status is either, by the way. I'm not sure. But at least through the top three, which is usually enough in a playoff series. I mean, you get into the long series and sometimes you don't even use more than three. So we'll see. But they got to get there. A magic number didn't change. The Tigers have picked the exact right time to get white hot. They have won four as the Royals have lost four and have made up a ton of ground here. The good news for Kansas City, Tommy, is they're making up ground not just on the Royals, but on the Twins too. So the Twins are potentially going to enter this magic number conversation also, which is good. The Royals have the advantage of being the top of those three teams. If the Tigers stay hot and were to pass them, the Royals still have the game and a half on the Twins. Remember, they're in the second wild card spot, not the third. So that makes my panic meter, and I said, right, 1 to 10. I'm probably at about a 5 right now. The Royals get the day off. They get an advantageous schedule here coming up. They get three against the Giants at home. They go to Washington for three, and then they go to Atlanta for three, and you'd really like to have this wrapped up by the time you get through the Washington series. The Tigers are, I would say, slightly more difficult in their schedule. Here's the other thing, too, is the Orioles are also struggling. They've lost three in a row. So Kansas City's just 2.5 back of Baltimore. So that is also potentially on the table here, but I don't think you look at that yet. So as we look at the Tigers, they go to Baltimore. Somebody, Tommy, is losing ground in that series, right? Like, between the Tigers and the Orioles, whoever loses those games is an advantage to the Royals as long as they're doing what they need to do. Like, if the Tigers stay hot and beat Baltimore up, then you've got an opportunity to go get the top wild card spot. So, like, the schedule is good here. And then it's three against Tampa, by the way, and Tampa can always pitch. And then they do close against the White Sox. I'm not as focused on the Tigers right now. I think the Tigers may get in. You go and look at the Twins then. The Twins also play Baltimore to finish the season, by the way. They still have to make up a game against Cleveland today. Not make up a game. They still have to finish their series with Cleveland today. They go on the road to Boston, and they get three against Miami. I love the fact that Baltimore's back in play. One way or the other, right? You get three of those games, Baltimore-Detroit. You get three of those games, Baltimore-Minnesota. No matter who wins or loses those games, it will help the Royals. That's six of the games, right, potentially. That helps the Royals. That's why I'm not overly panicking yet. The Royals have wiggle room because of the way the schedule falls for all of these teams down the stretch.
It wouldn't shock me one bit, honestly, if Detroit makes it into the playoffs. I mean, they're the hottest team in baseball right now. And they're, you know, I think I heard on the broadcast last night that in the last 34 games, Detroit is 24-10 over that stretch. I mean, they've been phenomenal. And what's interesting is that, you know, they're going to play Baltimore next. And Baltimore on paper has a better roster from top to bottom, I think, than Detroit does. Bigger names, more high-profile players. All that young talent that the Orioles have accumulated over the last few years. On paper, the Orioles look like the better team. And throughout the entire season, the body of work shows that they have been. But it wouldn't surprise me one bit if Detroit comes in and takes that series against Baltimore. And then we're talking about the Royals, assuming that they can, you know, get back on track a little bit this weekend against the Giants at home. We could be talking about a whole lot of jumbled up, you know, situations in the wild card race for the Royals. I think the only thing I was thinking about this last night, the only thing that it concerns me slightly, and it could wildly go one of two directions. I think that everybody is so focused on the Royals just making the playoffs, and rightfully so because of how, you know, close it's going to be and all of that, that nobody's really thought much about what happens once they're in the playoffs. And we know that they've got the rotation set up nicely for a playoff series and all of that, but it could go one of two directions. You could have so much focus on the regular season, winning the as many games as you can down the stretch to get in, that you take your eye off the ball in the playoffs and you're immediately eliminated. Or it could go the other way around, where you have no pressure going into the playoffs. You're kind of playing with house money, and you can make a little bit of a run. So it could go one of two directions. I was just thinking about that last night, that the conversation and the narrative, rightfully so, has been so wrapped up in will they or won't they even make it, that at this point there really has been very little discussion about what happens when and if they do.
Yeah, and look, they're a streaky team, so that has always been like, are they hot or not going in? We'll talk about that. By the way, just on the Orioles here, they go Detroit, at the Yankees, at Minnesota to finish. That's good. I mean, if the Royals just win their games here, they could get the top wild card spot, which hasn't been in play in forever. So, like, if you're panicking, there be Baltimore.
Well,
Baltimore should probably be panicking a little.
The one thing you did say there, they have to win their games. They're on a four-game losing skid right now, so you've got to get that turned around.
You do. And that's what we're going to talk about next. I would say this. It's been more about Detroit than it's been about Kansas City. That's how I felt. They did take two of three from Pittsburgh, that, and I know they lost that last game by a run. But to me, what I just watched in the last series, that was a Detroit thing. Last night was a little frustrating with the errors and some of those things. Detroit's white hot. You get a day off. Let's talk about that. What happens here? What does the team need to do? And to you know, to get to your comment, is this team poised to make a run if they can get there? We'll get to some video comments as well. Your comments on the IHOP hotline, 869-1240. It's all out there for you, Royals fans. We'll go another segment on baseball before we switch to some betting talk a little bit later in the hour. Don't go away. More Sports Daily right after this.
...97.5 and 1240 KFH. It's time to get back to the sports talk.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
Welcome back in, everybody. Sports Daily here. Baseball coverage on KFH presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile and you can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster here. Jad Chambers producing. Jad tells me it's National Talk Like a Pirate Day. Reminds me of this pirate buddy I have. Tommy was at the grocery store the other day and he was walking around and he had his pirate ship steering wheel. He had it hanging out of his pants, like the zipper of his pants. And he's walking around, no big deal, right? Does this all the time. And he gets to the cashier and the cashier says, "Sir, did you know that there's a steering wheel hanging out of the front of your pants?" And he said, Yeah, I know. Arr, it's driving me nuts.
It's been a minute since we've had a dad joke on this show. So yeah, I was, I was hoping it was, you know, you kind of get lured into like a false sense of security and hope that you'll never get another one. And then you just come out of nowhere and slap me across the face with it.
Yeah. Appreciate the rim shot there, Chad. That was unplanned. So, we need to bring those back. We need to bring those back.
Just a little word of advice, a little disclaimer for anybody who's going around the office with National Talk Like a Pirate Day. Be very careful to who you're talking about booty with while you're around the office, because that could very quickly end up in an HR complaint.
Yeah. Are we safe with driving me nuts? I guess I should have run that through the,
I think you're okay. You know, is it distasteful? Sure. Is it something that's going to get us in trouble? Probably not.
Okay. Well, we're good then. Yeah. All the pirate stuff today. I'm not sure how this became a holiday. But I'm glad Jad's here to remind us. Okay, let's continue the Royals conversation here. We'll have PJ Glasser up next segment to talk a little betting. I keep saying my panic meter is not high for two reasons. A, what we just went over with the schedules, there are a lot of opportunities for the Royals to be the beneficiary of the way these schedules finish up, not just for themselves, but for everybody else. Yes, they need to still win games. I haven't watched them, Tommy, other than, you know, a couple of mistakes last night. Like the Urcig game, it was an extra innings. Like that's a crapshoot these days with the rules. I haven't watched them in this stressful time that we've been talking about and thought, man, they're playing really bad. They've done that at times this year. This doesn't feel like one of those times to me. And so a day off now, I'm still pretty confident in. And I'll tell you, like, the pitching's better now than it was, I don't know, 4 or 5 weeks ago, where it was really rocky. The starting pitching hasn't been the problem in this. I mean, you know, Lugo wasn't great his last time out, but other than that, like,
Marsh wasn't good last night. I mean, and that, but he's not.
Marsh is never going to be great. Like, Marsh is what he is. He's your fifth starter, or your, well, right now, I guess he's your fourth starter, but he is what he is, right? He's just, he's there helping out. He's not going to be a factor in the postseason, I don't think. And, you know, if he is, it's probably a bad news situation. So I look at it. I think Urcic, even though he lost the other game, like, his stuff to me looked good the other night. I think Bubic is still the guy to bridge you to Urcic, and I think you feel decent about all three of your starters being able to potentially get through seven innings. It's what happens if they can only get through six that gets a little dicey. Bobby Witt Jr. showing some signs of life. Salvador Perez. Like, those guys have to be hot. We know that. But I still feel good about this team's chances if they can get there, because this team has always started with its starting pitching, and I feel good about its starting pitching at this point.
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple of players outside of Bobby Witt and Salvador Perez that have cooled off as of late. Freddie Fermin has not been good lately, and we've seen his playing time increase, especially with Vinny Pasquantino out and on the IL. So that's been, you know, somebody that the Royals need offensively to be able to start to produce a little bit more. He's been nails, though, behind the plate throughout the series, throwing out runners and that sort of thing. So he's been fantastic defensively. They just need his bat to come alive a little bit more. Hunter Renfroe has cooled off some. And so especially, and I mentioned it just a moment ago, especially with, you know, Pasquantino, there's no guarantee that, you know, we'll see him back even at any point during the playoffs. They need to have a couple of other players be able to provide an offensive spark in that lineup outside of Witt and Perez. And, you know, Tommy Pham has cooled off in the last couple of games. Paul DeJong, I think, has been a breath of fresh air as of late, and continuing that, I think, is going to be, you know, essential for Kansas City. So they've got to find some supplemental bats in that lineup. And especially guys, if you really want to drill down into it, I mentioned this in the first segment, guys that are going to be able to drive runners in when they're on base. Because the Royals have not had an issue in the last couple of games on getting runners on base. The issue has been bringing them in. And so they've got to try to find a way to make that happen in clutch, you know, clutch situations. Even if they were slightly better with runners in scoring position in the last couple of games, they probably would have won one, if not both, of those games.
Austin says the last couple of games have shown how much they miss Vinny's bat. I totally agree, Austin, but I don't know. You can't count on it now, right? Maybe you could count on it later, but you can't count on it now. Yeah, that's the hole, right? Vinny Pasquantino was on pace to be 100 RBI guy, well over 100 RBIs. So they've missed that greatly. It's going to have to be a little bit different, and it's almost going to have to be pesky. It's almost going to have to remind me of what we saw a little bit in like 2014, maybe, where some of these guys are just going to have to be really difficult to get out, aggressive on the bases, make the other team make mistake kind of baseball. And I think they can do that. I also think if they catch the right side of a Bobby Witt Jr. or Salvador Perez heater, that can carry them through a series. Like, those guys are both capable of that too, but you gotta, at that point, you have to set the table for them. So again, it's the day off. I know the magic number being at 8 with 9 games to play is a little frightening to say out loud. I get that part of it. If they weren't in a position to benefit from all, you know, all three of the other teams essentially they're contending with here, I think it would be far worse. But yes, they do have to win games. They get a great opportunity to do that here quickly, right? You get three, you get to stay at home after a day off. You get to stay at home and you get three against the Giants. That's awesome. You know, they'll face some decent pitching there, but you got to be able to beat the Giants at home. Then you go to Washington, and you got to be able to beat up on bad pitching. Atlanta, I'm just like, if we get to the point where we're done with the Washington series, Tommy, and that magic number's bigger than like one, I'll be worried at that point. That's where I'm like, okay, but you know, with six games before that, the magic number being at eight, the magic number is about to enter the conversation for the Twins also. There's a lot of opportunities for the Royals to get that done over the next six games. And I think that they will, by the way. I think that it'll be done by the time they get to the Atlanta series. I get it. Stressful. This is what it means to play relevant September baseball. This is what we bargained for, right? This is what we couldn't have asked for more to start this season. This is exactly what we would have hoped for. Now it's here, though, and it's really stressful. I get it. If you are better, it's been a stressful couple weeks of football betting. Perhaps we'll get PJ Glasser in to help us next segment navigate some of these stormy waters, especially in the NFL. That's next. Don't go away. It's all Brockton Caster at Sports Daily. Keep it right here. Welcome in here, everybody. It is Sports Daily. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster with you live here for the next hour and a half. Glad to be with you as we get ready for a football weekend. Happy to bring in now to get our bets ready for that football weekend, starting tonight with Thursday Night Football, PJ Glasser. Glad to have PJ in on the program again with us this week. PJ, has it been as crazy for you as it has been crazy for us on this football season?
Yeah, I mean, definitely all the upsets we had last week, guys. They're showing the stat that every favorite who has laid like 6.5 points or more this season, they're 0-8 against the spread. So these big underdogs, we saw it last week with Tampa and Las Vegas and Atlanta on Monday night. Not only have they been covering these games, but a lot of them have been winning it outright. And especially week three in the NFL is usually one of my favorite weeks of the year to target underdogs because these teams don't want to go 0-3, right? I mean, the stats out there of teams who go 0-3 and their likelihood to make the playoffs. So we have some matchups this week with, some 0-2 teams going up against 2-0 teams or some 0-2 teams that are in some desperate spots against some good teams. And it's going to make for some really, really good games this week. But guys, it's definitely been tough for sure.
You know, it starts go ahead, Jacob.
I was just going to say you can find PJ on Send It In, which is it's a great show through the BetQL app. You can find all of PJ's work here, not just on this show. It's presented by BetMGM. Search Send It In on the Odyssey app if you want to see that. But yeah, PJ, I was going to start. You mentioned the big underdogs. We got one tonight. It's Thursday Night Football. 6-point dogs. The Patriots. Anybody comfortable? You know, I don't know. I'm not really comfortable with anything. I like Ramondre Stevenson to run the ball a lot. And there's a prop for that. Is that crazy? Or what do you look at with this game?
Yeah, Ramondre was a guy that I was targeting in this game. I think Alan Lazard's another guy to target in this game for the Jets. Obviously had that big week one against San Francisco, then didn't really do too much last week against Tennessee. It's a tough game to handicap, right? Because we obviously all had these assumptions about the Patriots coming into the season and that they were going to be the worst team in the NFL. They'd maybe be lucky to win two or three games. They very easily could be 2-0 right now to start the season. Now they go on the road in a divisional game. Guys, the Jets haven't been this big a favorite against New England in a long, long time. So it's a tough game, right? Like divisional game like this. We just talked about how great these big underdogs have been doing. I think the Jets are a good like teaser option this week. You know, you tease them down the 6 points, just take them on the money line, -275. Pair them with one of these other favorites on the board or maybe even an underdog that you want to take some more points with. But I would lean towards the Jets -6. I think taking them on the money line is the way to go. I honestly would look at like the field goal kickers in this game, you know, taking their props like over 1.5 field goals. Short week, Thursday night. We know how ridiculous these kickers have been hitting 50 yarders this season. And I think it's just going to be that kind of game, you know, low scoring and a lot of field goals. So I do think props are probably the way to go in tonight's game. Ramondre, certainly Lazard's a guy that I like. And then the field goal kickers for both teams, I think, could have a good game as well.
PJ, after 2 weeks of the regular season and 2 weeks of seeing Aaron Rodgers, are you a believer in him, with especially with the way that he comes into this game and you know, what his prop bets are? Is that something that you look at too?
Yeah, I definitely am a believer in Aaron. I mean, the first 2 weeks, he's shown us that he still had the arm talent, you know, to make all the throws the first 2 weeks, which has been really impressive. They got Braylon Allen going last week as well. He scored 2 touchdowns for the Jets. My concern, honestly, guys, with this team a little bit, has been the defense. You know, I thought this defense would be one of the top three units in football. And they did some good things against Tennessee last week, but with the way that San Francisco was able to run the ball on them week one, the Titans were able to move the ball a little bit on them as well. The Patriots tonight should be the game where it gets the Jets D going. You know, they're at home. It's a short week. You're going up against an offense that really is not very explosive, but the Patriots have been running the ball on teams and they've been scoring points. So Rodgers, I have no concern about. I think as the season continues to go on, he'll get more confidence in his ankle, in his leg. And I mean, the arm talent is still there. So yeah, Rodgers, I think will play well again tonight, but the Jets defense, I want to see them kind of turn into that unit that a lot of us thought they would be coming into the season.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And look, it just feels ugly. Breece Hall, by the way, is a Wichita guy. I don't know if you know that, PJ. So we always have our eye on Breece Hall. We always root for Breece Hall. So, you know, there's always the fans' interest on him in any game that gets played. Let's look around and we'll get to college football. We'll get to KU and K-State in a little bit, but let's just stay on the NFL train right now. So the underdogs have been good. Sometimes it feels like, and I have no data to back this up, sometimes the pendulum swings hard in the NFL. There's not a lot of big lines this week, but by week three, outside of the injury issues some teams face, is this a week where we might see some teams that have been a little slower than we thought out of the gates can come back in a sort of a big way at the same time?
Yeah, I think so, because again, we were talking about at the beginning, just the desperation for a lot of these teams that are 0-2. One of my favorite bets of the week, guys, is on Monday night with the Jags +5.5 against Buffalo. I like them plus the points. I think there's a chance that they can win that game outright. One of the things that's like my favorite to bet in the NFL, spots that I always look for, is when teams were favored at home the previous week, lose that game outright, and then they're underdogs on the road the next week. We had 3 of those cases, guys, in week 2. You had Cleveland lose at home week 1 to Dallas's favorites, come back the next week, beat Jacksonville outright as a road dog. Cincinnati, obviously, last week against Kansas City, covered the spread. They lost outright to New England. And then we saw what Atlanta did on Monday night when they lost week 1 at home to the Steelers outright, and then they turn around and beat Philadelphia. So Jacksonville fits that this week. They lost at home as a favorite to Cleveland. They come on the road against Buffalo. The Bills look great on Thursday night against Miami. They got an extended week, and now here comes Jacksonville, who's 0-2. But, I mean, very easily could be 2-0 this season, right? That Miami game, they were up double digits. And then Cleveland committed 13 penalties, and they were 2-for-13 on third down. Jags just couldn't muster any offense. They couldn't win that game. But I think this is a good spot to back Jacksonville this week, +5.5. Peterson's seat is getting a little hot. Lawrence has not played all that great the first couple weeks. And I think a lot of people, you know, coming into the season – were kind of concerned about Buffalo in the AFC East. After that Miami win, now people are thinking they're the team to beat in that division. I like kind of selling high on a team a little bit, so I like Jacksonville this week.
PJ, one of my favorite games this weekend, the Eagles on the road in New Orleans against the Saints. The Saints have been an offensive juggernaut in the first 2 games. Derek Carr, you know, all of a sudden is, you know, looks like he's out there, you know, Brett Favre-ing it and just absolutely running wild. I don't know if I think that that's going to continue at this kind of level and this kind of clip long term, but at least right now the Saints are hot. They're home favorites against an Eagles team that disappointed last week. I'm not a huge believer in Philly because I think they have a ton of talent, but I just don't think that team comes together. I don't like Nick Sirianni a bunch. What do you like in this game, especially knowing that the Eagles, with all their talent, are road dogs this weekend?
It's going to be a really good game, guys. I think this line, though, has just gotten way too out of control now that we're getting +3 with the Eagles. I think that's the play. The look-ahead line in this game before games went off in week 2 was the Eagles were favored by 2.5, right? And how different would the conversation be if Saquon Barkley makes that catch and the Eagles win that game? Everybody says, oh, it was a great play call. Eagles got out of there. They escaped with A.J. Brown. They're a 2-0 team going up against New Orleans. And the Saints, it's interesting how after their week 1 game against Carolina, we all thought that was a really impressive performance. Offense looked good. Let's see him do it against a good team, though. And now they do it against Dallas. And instead of people saying, you know what, I want to see more out of the Saints. I want to see if they can continue to do this. We're pricing them like they're going to be one of the best offenses in football the entire season, right? So I'm getting an Eagles team off of a loss that really should have been a win. I know they don't have A.J. Brown, and that certainly hurts them, but it just feels like there's way too much love for the Saints right now. Like, this was a team we were all skeptical on going into week 2, not sure if their offense was legit. And now this line is like, we're completely buying into the Saints all of a sudden. It's been a 5.5-point adjustment from this game off of the Eagles losing a game they shouldn't have lost and the Saints offense being incredible. Guys, Derek Carr and the Saints have had 15 drives this season. They have scored on all 15 of those drives, whether it's been a field goal or a touchdown. That's obviously not going to continue. So the Saints are due for some regression. I like the Eagles bouncing back. You're getting a 3 with them as well. I'm on Philadelphia.
Yeah, I am too. And the Cowboys played a part. It was a Mike McCarthy special. Follow a big win with an absolute dud.
Yep.
And that makes the Cowboys and the Ravens one of, to me, the more intriguing but difficult bets or games or anything. The Ravens are 0-2. Like, if you think the Cowboys were disappointing, the Ravens lost to the Raiders. You've got two teams that we think are in the upper echelon, both with their backs against the wall. Like, I have no idea what to do with that one.
Game of the week, and it's for that reason, Jacob, because of the Cowboys are coming off a blowout loss. The Ravens are 0-2. Not only are the Ravens 0-2, guys, they're home against Buffalo next week, and then they're at Cincinnati in week 5. So, like, this thing very easily could get ugly to the point where they're like 1-4 or maybe even 0-5. The thing I keep going back to, and you guys know I'm a Ravens fan, Lamar's 20-1 against the NFC, and his ability against these teams that don't see him very often, that see him once every 4 years, you know, you can watch all the film you want on him, and you can try and simulate him in practice and walkthroughs and bring out the scout team, but until you get out there and you face him and you don't see him very often, it's just watching what he does to these NFC teams. We saw it last year when they blew out San Francisco. We saw it when they blew out Detroit. They blew out Seattle. Like, go back and look what the Ravens did to some of those NFC teams that they played last season. So he's great against the NFC. The Ravens have also kind of been notorious for like blowing fourth quarter leads, right? Like being up double digits and just completely collapsing at the end. They've done that 5 times the last couple of years. They bounced back the following week and won all 5 of those games. So Lamar against the NFC, Ravens have the ability to bounce back after a really tough loss. It's going to be a really good game because Dallas is probably pissed off with how things went against New Orleans, but Lamar's 21, fellas, against the NFC. I can't overlook that. So I'll roll with Baltimore this week.
Sunday Night Football this week, PJ, the Chiefs on the road in Atlanta taking on the Falcons. And, you know, I had a concern really early on, like in week 1 and actually the first part of the Falcons last game when they came back and won, that maybe Kirk Cousins was not fully back and maybe he had lost a step. That final drive when he led the Falcons down to score and win the game, he might be back. He might be, you know, vintage Kirk Cousins a little bit there. Of course, the Chiefs hang on to beat the Bengals on Sunday. What do you like in this game? The Chiefs are road favorites. They didn't cover the spread, as you mentioned, a week ago. I have a hard time backing Kansas City, even though I really want to, where that line is right now, just because they didn't cover last week. And I was kind of impressed with the way the Falcons closed out the game in their game a week ago.
Yeah, and it'll be another good game. I like Kansas City -3.5, guys. Again, when we were talking about that Eagles-Saints game, right, it's just kind of the perception around Philly right now. It's the same thing with Atlanta. Like, if Saquon makes that catch, I mean, Cousins in the Atlanta offense for a majority of the game really did not do anything. But because Barkley drops that pass, it gives us one more drive of Atlanta, and Cousins looks great, and the offense goes right down the field. And again, the look-ahead line in this game was 4.5 for the Chiefs. If the Falcons don't make that final drive, it's probably still 4.5. So I think you're getting a little value here with Kansas City. And, you know, as we know, the Chiefs, the first two games, right? Like if Likely's toe isn't out, they either win that game by one or lose that game by one, depending on what the Ravens do in the 2-point conversion. Cincinnati, they only won by a point. So the Chiefs have obviously been winning these games. They could be going a lot different. I still don't feel like we've really gotten an A performance out of them, maybe even like a B-plus performance out of them. So I like Kansas City in this spot, -3.5. I'm not willing to buy into Cousins in Atlanta yet, just after that one drive that we saw.
Yeah, that's going to be just an incredible game to watch for a lot of different reasons. PJ, let's get a little college in here. You know, here where we are, the talk has been the disappointment around Kansas football. They open the Big 12 now. The betting opportunity for them has been what we're not used to. It's been the under. They have their offense is not very good right now, and their defense has been very good. I see another one here at West Virginia with a 56 on it. I'm going to keep hitting it until something changes. But 56 for an offense that's been one of just not good right now, I'm all over that one. What do you like in Kansas, West Virginia?
I'm with you. I would take the under in this game as well. Jacob, the side, it's a tough one. It's a coin flip. West Virginia, Morgantown's a tough place to play. I'd probably lean towards WVU. That Kansas game was just so brutal last week. I mean, I don't have to tell you guys or your listeners. That play when UNLV fumbled and like Kansas had five different opportunities to fall on it and they couldn't get it. Like when that stuff happens, you just know it's not your kind of night. Daniels just obviously doesn't look like himself. He's struggling to throw the ball right now. I definitely think they need to lean more on Devin Neal in the ground game a little bit. But I would lean towards West Virginia. I do think the under, though, is the play. Because like you said, Kansas's defense has been good. And how they've been moving the ball on offense has been the ground game. So obviously when you run the ball, you chew the clock. Now in college football, it doesn't stop anymore after first downs. West Virginia is going to look to do the same thing as well. So both of these teams don't mind playing the game in the low 20s. And I think that's what it's going to be, like a 24-20, 27-24 kind of game. So I like the under as well, 56.5.
Our other in-state team, PJ, the Wildcats, Kansas State, it's going to be really interesting for them. They head out to Provo to take on BYU. It's a late start here in the Central Time Zone. It's kind of, I think people are calling it Big 12 after dark now. It's kind of uncharted territory a little bit for the Wildcats going out to play BYU. Right now, they're 6-point road favorites. They really flexed in a top 25 matchup a week ago against Arizona on national TV on Fox. So obviously, you know, the line kind of following that a little bit. Are you a believer in that 6-point favorite line for the Wildcats, or is there something else you like?
Yeah, I like K-State. I'd lay the 6.5 with them in BYU. Again, it's a tough place to play, right? You're going on the night. You're going to Provo during the night. It's going to be a tricky game, but I like how K-State bounced back. I like what their defense did against Arizona. Avery Johnson's obviously got to continue to develop as a passer, but man, is he a great athlete. I think K-State just leans on Giddens. They lean on Avery Johnson's legs. BYU's offense, you know, isn't very good. How they've been kind of winning and hanging around in these games is just mucking it up and keeping it ugly. K-State obviously doesn't mind playing that kind of game either. I just think their offense is much more crisp. It's much more explosive. And I think they found something in that second half of that Tulane game. You know, it looked like they were going to get upset. Something flipped. They carry that over into the game against Arizona. And I think they continue that into the BYU game as well, because obviously they got some big games coming up on deck. Oklahoma State and Utah play each other on Saturday. So somebody's got to lose that game. Good opportunity here for Kansas State. I think they take care of business.
PJ, we really appreciate it. Any other, we got about a minute here. What's your favorite college bet of the weekend?
Favorite college bet of the weekend, guys, is going to be Navy +9.5 against Memphis. So Memphis obviously just had that huge win against Florida State, right? And we all know when Memphis's schedule came out this season, the first game that they circled was Florida State. A lot of people think Memphis could make it to the college football playoff as the Group of Five winner. So you win that game, emotional win. Now you got to go on the road to Annapolis, Maryland, and play Navy and that wishbone offense and a team that's just going to be chopping at your legs for 3 hours, right? And if there was ever a team that you didn't want to have a letdown spot against or be looking ahead for whatever reason, it's against Navy, because as we know, you got to be disciplined. You got to know your assignments on that wishbone. So Navy has not played anybody the first 2 weeks. They have a new coach. We really don't know what to expect out of this team. And I'm expecting Memphis to not be ready. It's an early kick, noon Eastern kick. I like Navy plus the points. I think there's a chance they could pull off that upset. It's a dangerous spot for Memphis.
PJ, we appreciate it. I'm a Cowboys fan, so I'm not going to wish you luck this weekend. We'll have bragging rights on the line there. But, you know, what are you going to do?
Absolutely. Should be a great game. Good talking to you guys. Have a good rest of your week.
There goes PJ Glasser. Appreciate that insight. The host of Send It In and Odyssey Sports Betting Insider, PJ Glasser. Those calls presented by BetMGM. Go check out all the latest lines today on the BetMGM app. That's good stuff there. And look, if you didn't catch all of it, if you missed any of it, you can go back and listen on the Odyssey app. A lot of time between now and Saturday. The Thursday night bets are there with PJ, that conversation as well, if you joined us late, so you can go back and listen on the Odyssey app. All right, hour number two is coming up. We're going to reset. We're going to talk a little K-State football, a little more with our K-State insider, Tim Fitzgerald. Feeling pretty good right now in Manhattan, but they got to take this show on the road here as they open up Big 12 play. That conversation next on Sports Daily.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
He's got all the insight of what you want to know and maybe some of what you don't want to know. Here's K-State insider Tim Fitzgerald.
All right, and welcome in, everybody. We are kicking off hour number two here of Sports Daily with our K-State insider, Tim Fitzgerald. Glad to be here with you. This portion of the program brought to you by Crestview Country Club. You can get out there, play a little golf, and watch the K-State game. Maybe this weekend it'll actually be on too late. But you can get out there and watch a lot of college football, NFL football at the restaurant. We appreciate Crestview's support. Get out there, give them a call. Fitz, welcome in. Welcome into the pupper there as well on the video stream. We've got dual efforts here at the Fitz household. You can watch us, by the way, on that video stream. 12 News Connected, Facebook, YouTube, X. Fitz, look, we're 3 weeks in, and it's been exactly what you want to see, I think, from K-State. Growth of the two young stars. They're 3-0. They get into Big 12 play. You feel good about the way they're playing football. And it's going to be a test this week. They got to go to a tough place and play a team that's also 3-0 that looks like they're pretty good.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, look at the progression of this season. They had the, you know, early game against UT Martin. And they had a real test that they didn't expect, and I think they're better for that. And we saw that against Arizona. So now you get to go on a road in a really daunting environment. Should be a lot of fun. But this is a nice step for this team. You win this and you come home to play Oklahoma State and what will be a huge contest. What you can't let happen is that you're enjoying Arizona and looking forward to Oklahoma State and you get the step in the middle. So we'll see if they're attentive to details as this game opens late Saturday night.
When you were on with us a week ago, Fitz, we talked about, I think I called it the Dylan Edwards problem, about trying to find ways to get him more touches. And I mean, he absolutely made the most of the times that he had the ball against Arizona, including that punt return. You know, it's a good problem to have when you have all that talent on the field. But it does look like, at least from what I saw against Arizona, that Coach Klieman has found a really good way to incorporate Edwards more into the game plan, both offensively and with special teams, to where he can make a significant impact, and it doesn't really do any harm to either DJ Giddens or Avery Johnson.
No, you're exactly right. They did use him more. It might not show necessarily up in the stats, but Arizona was biting on him pretty hard. So a lot of those, run options, Avery would keep the ball. So we saw the effect of that. So just putting him on the field, particularly with Giddens and Avery Johnson, just stresses a defense to the point where they can't cover at all and someone's going to make a wrong decision. And if Avery makes the right decision where to put the ball, and they haven't even layered in a pass out of that formation yet, it's going to be a really effective tool going forward, because it doesn't matter if you scouted it, you still got to figure it out in the moment. And they're really good at that.
I mean, he's scoring touchdowns on about, I think, 25% of his touches right now.
Yeah.
And the touches are going to go. And I, quite frankly, I think they've used Dylan just about perfectly up to this point. I think they're doing exactly what they need to do with him, because we want to see this offense rev up as it goes. And it is revving up, and we're seeing growth out of the young players. So it'll be an interesting test, though, Fitz, for the defense. That, look, the defense answered some questions, I think, in that game. The secondary wasn't perfect. They couldn't stop McMillan. There's a lot of teams that can't stop McMillan. It was much better than the Tulane game. They were really good against the run in Arizona. They better be really good against the run against BYU, because that's pretty much all they do, right? Like, this will be the good test for the other side of that defense, I think.
Well, you know, BYU does a good job, Jake Ratzlaff, their quarterback, of getting the ball around the field. But he's a very effective runner. Now, they're down to their fourth or fifth running back, so that's dented their running plans quite a bit. But I am impressed by how good those guys are, you know, in relation to where they are on a depth chart. But I think this BYU offense will be a good test. And the key for this defense is to win those third downs, which it started doing the last 2.5 quarters against Arizona. That's always a key, but this is going to be the point of emphasis for this team on the defensive side of the ball, is getting teams off the field. And once they do that, they give the ball back. They have to punt it to Dylan Edwards, and then they have to put the ball in the hands of Avery Johnson. So I think that's essential, just to be efficient on third down, which means you got to be pretty good on second down too.
I know coming off the Tulane game, Fitz, the major defensive concern was the secondary and the way that they played against Tulane. And we talked about it a week ago, that Arizona did pose, you know, a pretty significant threat with McMillan and just everything that they wanted to do in throwing the football, Arizona did. How did you think that the K-State secondary responded? I know McMillan is a talent and he got his, there's no doubt about it, but did you feel like you saw a better showing from the secondary overall? I know BYU likes to run the ball, but moving forward, especially further into Big 12 play, they're going to be playing a lot of teams that, you know, want to air it out a lot.
Yeah, Arizona, you know, has probably the best quarterback receiver combination in college football. And I thought their plan on Fifita and T-Mac was really interesting, to let him get his, but don't let him get extra after the catch. And that's what they did pretty consistently. I think he had one play where he started to wiggle loose and they got him down to the ground. So 11 catches, but not hardly any after the catch damage. And that's really what they were after. And they continued to squeeze that pocket. And that's been the real key. The back end's been good in the last game. After the breakdowns at Tulane, they seemed to really learn some lessons. And we saw that with Keenan Garber's incredible interception, as he broke off of T-Mac himself to go have a coverage in zone and took care of it. But if this team keeps progressing, keeps squeezing the pocket on quarterbacks, which they need to do, Ratzlaff's more of a runner, so they have to worry about that. It's going to be hard for opposing offenses to operate.
Well, and it is, you know, we've seen BYU and what they want to do for so long, Fitz, and you bring up a good point about the injuries for them at running back. And, you know, the weird thing about their offense, and I don't know what to make of this for the test for K-State, Retzloff's throwing it more now. He threw it almost 40 times in the game against Wyoming. So they're going to throw it, but you said he spreads the ball around. I it's like 15 different receivers in that game, but they ran it with five different guys too. Like, that's what's wild. Like, it's not, they're going to, it, like, how do you, it, when you play Arizona, it was very clear who their best player is, right? McMillan is an NFL wide receiver. He's a stud, but it was so funneled to him in that game. What did he have? He had like 15 targets, whereas BYU has like 15 different guys catching the ball. It feels like this will be a totally different test for K-State. Whether BYU chooses to run or to throw, there's going to be a ton of guys involved offensively.
Yeah, and I think that is an indication that K-State will probably spend a lot of this game in their base 3-3-5 just to try to cover everything. They're really good in that base. They've got usages for a four-man front, which they might slide into in certain situations. You know, I don't think we'll see them go in nickel or dime much. Well, they are in nickel, but keep those three safeties out there. I think this is going to be kind of a back-to-basics, do-your-job type of game, and honestly, that's what they had in Tulane, and they didn't do great with it. So, yeah, we'll see how they handle this. But they don't do anything fancy. They just do stuff well. And this BYU team is getting back to being physical because they weren't physical enough last season.
You know, it's interesting, Fitz, that this is a matchup between two teams that it's not like they have played a lot of football against each other historically. The Wildcats going out to Provo, it's a late night game, Big 12 after dark, you know, so something that is a little bit different where, you know, back home, at what kickoff is at 9:30 p.m. on Saturday night, so it's going to be a late night game. How much of that do you think the program thinks about, you know, as they're prepping for this game, going into that environment in Provo? BYU fans, they typically show up there, and it can get weird when it's a late game like that. Is that something that goes through their minds in preparation, or is it more about we just focus on what we can do in the moment in the game plan?
Yeah, I think it's got to be that. I mean, they're doing some physical preparations through their medical staff with altitude. Trying to prepare for that, but I mean, what are you going to do in Kansas? Go to Mount Sunflower? I mean, that doesn't really change the altitude that much. you just have to kind of fight through that, fight through the time. The time's the biggest challenge. I mean, your body clock's your body clock. And granted, these are young guys, but they're not used to playing football at midnight, and they will be. So it's going to be very interesting to see how K-State responds, because there are a bunch of challenges built into one game, but none of them are significant, but they put together, they are. BYU is so good at night at home. It's a whiteout. It's going to be, they of course pulled out the 96 throwbacks when they beat K-State in the Cotton Bowl. K-State will also be wearing their throwbacks. They just happen to be the same uniforms. It's going to be a very entertaining game and a great environment. I haven't looked forward to going on the road to a school like this probably since West Virginia joined the conference, so it's fun to have a new destination.
Wait, you're going, Fitz?
Of course I'm going. They've got a special cougar tail, which is a giant donut thing covered in honey maple and
so,
vanilla.
Listen, I'm going. It's when was the last time? You're not going to, you know, the party capital of the world here.
No.
This is when was the last time, Fitz, stayed up past midnight without a party involved?
Oh, crap. This might be the greatest question ever asked in sports radio. I'm going to have to get with my agent.
You know what I mean? Like,
my attorney, legal counsel.
Yeah, like it's look, it's easy to stay up to midnight when you got a party, but you're going to Utah. Like, I don't know that the sugar's going to be enough.
I'm prepared to announce this. Please don't tell anyone in Provo or associated with the church. I'll be smuggling massive amounts of caffeine into the press box. Okay. It'll be an amazing effort. I'll have them in my armpits and other places I'm not going to talk about, but I'm getting a lot of caffeine into that press box, and I'm just going to pour it in my eyes when I get tired. That should wake me up.
Just put it somewhere they won't look, where they won't check, and you'll be safe. Look, back to the football here. Avery ran it 17 times against Arizona. That's exciting because he's really good at football and running the ball. I don't know that the coaches look at this and would enjoy knowing that Avery was going to run the ball 17 times a game.
I think he did a really good job of picking up first downs and getting the heck out of bounds.
He is good at that. I agree.
Yeah. I mean, and that's such an important part of your offense. Play doesn't work. You leave the quarterback a little bit too much room, he runs and picks it up. We see it with Mahomes and the Chiefs quite a bit. And wisely, I got the sticks, I'm stepping out. That extra yard isn't worth it. What I saw before this last game is I thought he was just not even paying attention to the sticks and getting out of bounds. But now he'll put his shoulder down if he needs that extra yard. And maybe it was the magnitude of the game. A lot of that wasn't necessarily designed runs. It was either a scramble or a read where they were trying to take away DJ Giddens and Dylan Edwards. And that's the thing. You got to pick your poison, and it's all poison. So they couldn't stop Avery, and that's what Arizona gave them. This week it might be DJ. It might be Dylan Edwards. But as long as those three guys are on the field, K-State is very tough to match up with.
We talked about it a week ago, Fitz, about how good the Wildcats' pass rush has been through the first three games of the season. I mean, it's been really the cornerstone of the defense. And, you know, you're taking on – when you take on a team like Arizona with Fafita back there, they were able to get after him, not unlike they were able to do in their first two games. With a team like BYU, when they are more than likely going to lean on the run, can that pass rush still find ways to be disruptive, even if the offense attack is not quite what we've seen from the other three teams?
Yeah, a lot of it comes out of situational substitutions where they've got you in third and long, second and long, and they suspect you're going to put the ball in the air, and they bring in guys like Toby Osunsami and get after the quarterback. But Brendan Mott out of the base has done an incredible job. He's been really disruptive. He's been the best he's ever been, and he's been pretty good in the past, along with Austin Romaine coming on the blitz from middle linebacker. So this defense just kind of attacks you and doesn't necessarily need special formations to do so, but they're capable of doing that.
Fitz, we just were talking with our betting insider. He liked K-State in the line. I kind of do too, but the over under on this game, which has given me kind of a hard time to just get a feel for, it's like 48. Yeah. You know, K-State didn't get there last week. BYU didn't get there last week. If we think these two teams are going to run the ball, and I think that they probably will, do you see this game getting into a track meet, or do you feel like it's going to sort of slog out a little bit?
Yeah, I don't see it being a track meet. As much as K-State's offense can score quickly and rack up stats, that's not the brand of football they necessarily want to play. Look, they're not going to turn down the touchdown, but they'd prefer that offense to grind a little bit and keep the defense resting on the side, because that's really the key to getting into a shootout. It's not that you scored quickly and they score quickly. It's the defenses get tired, they never get rested, and the offenses are at an advantage throughout the game. That's not a brand of football K-State wants to play. It's a brand of football I think this team is built to win. But if the game devolves into that, I think they feel like they're equally suited to have a shootout with teams now with all these weapons.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't know if I want to bet the under yet. I got to think about that.
No.
I'll be across. I'm going to not be in Utah, but I'll also be across state lines, probably with a little better behavior than I would typically on a college football Saturday. So I got to make that decision in the next 24 hours or so before I get across the border. Fitz, tell the puppy we said hi.
Yeah, I don't know. He had his little hit, and then he just he's on break. He's taking a break.
Listen, the divas here, we appreciate it. Enjoy Utah. We'll need a full report on that experience, a late night in Utah, when we talk to you next week also.
Yeah, well, they're going to give me ice cream and pastries. And, I mean, if Utah was a conversion van, I'd get in that thing. I'd get in that thing and let you take me wherever you want.
Yeah, no, easy to bribe. I hear you. By the way, Fitz, gopowercat.com. What do you guys have up ahead of that game?
Man, PowerCat pregame podcast released at midnight. That's available if anyone needs a nice deep dive into this game with me and my guys. I think they do a great job. We've got the Friday walkthrough coming at midnight tonight. We've got our regular game coverage, the written stuff, all going up at GoPowerCat. You know, we're doing about 6-7 content items of K-State sports a day. So get on over to GoPowerCat and check it out.
There you go. You can also follow Fitz at Life of Fitz. Enjoy the trip, Fitz. We'll talk again next week.
Thank you, boys. Great to see you.
There goes Tim Fitzgerald. Listen, it's going to be an experience getting out there to Utah. Like it'll be a test. I don't know. I'm having a hard time with it, Tommy, a little bit. Like I think stylistically, I see it lower scoring. I think, right? But it's just K-State to me. KU has been more predictable. We'll put it that way as far as style of a game. K-State, to me, still feels a little bit unpredictable. I don't know what the identity of their offense is yet. And that's not a bad thing. I think it's a good thing, in fact, because I think they have a lot of strengths. But I still can't, like, wrap my head around what this offense will be in week 8. You know what I mean? Like, what do they look like then when they're doing what they want to do?
Well, because it's so multifaceted with so many different weapons that you can go a few different directions.
And maybe it never does. Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
And I do think that having kind of that Swiss Army knife – mentality. You know, hey, if you need Avery Johnson to tuck it and run, he can. If you're going to do a design play with one of those two running backs, you can do that too. Or even a designed run with him, Johnson himself, or air the ball out and use one of those guys in the backfield as, you know, potentially an additional pass catcher. We haven't talked a ton about the wide receivers for K-State over the last couple of weeks. Jace Brown had a really good game against Arizona on Friday night. So those guys have, I think, stepped up. And I think in Fitz and I, we talked about it during the offseason leading up to the year, that wide receiver room, while it lost a couple of key contributors like Phillip Brooks and others from a season ago, they might be more talented this season overall than they were a year ago. So that obviously adds to it as well. Of course, you know, it's always hard to replace a tight end like Ben Sinnott. The tight ends, you know, situation probably has taken a step back slightly. But overall, there are so many different weapons offensively that they can utilize.
I do think, I meant to ask Fitz this, I do think we are seeing Avery Johnson get more comfortable as a thrower. And that's a part of what makes it unpredictable too. Like 17 rushes doesn't feel like something that's going to happen every week. Maybe more like 10, right? But it's what is it when it, like the second half against Arizona, he started to groove a little bit as a passer. And that's the other part. Like as that development comes, what does that look like? K-State will play that late game, and you'll hear it right here on KFH, your home of Wildcat Athletics. All right, we've had back-to-back guests. We're going to catch our breath a little bit with all of this. We'll come back. It's open phones the rest of the way for you here, 869-1240 on the IHOP hotline. And let's set up our giveaway right now. We'll give away some HTO iced tea. More than 20 flavors to choose from of sweet and unsweet iced tea, and some coffee drinks for you, hot and iced, all the great flavors, all the traditional ones, plus some special exclusives to HTO. All you got to do to win is text the keyword TEA to the short code 20357. That's T to 20357. You can enter once per day. Message and data rates apply. These will be good for any of the three Wichita Metro locations. Good luck, everybody. We'll be back more Sports Daily with Albrock and Castor right after this.
Okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily here on KFH. Glad to be with you on this Thursday edition of the program. K-State football, we were just talking with Tim Fitzgerald, is available for free all season long here on KFH and on the Odyssey app. Tune in to 97.5 and 1240 at 6 o'clock tonight for the Chris Kleiman Show. That's just ahead of Thursday night football. Good night of programming here tonight for you. You can also find it all, of course, by simply downloading the Odyssey app and searching for KFH. It's been a crazy week for football. We've had all the injuries that pertain to the Chiefs here locally, all the stuff with KU football and Jalen Daniels. KU right now is one of the most fascinating stories to follow. What happens there? Can it be salvaged? Because again, the reality is, you start from zero. Like, this is it. Like, you know, if you can salvage it and you start to salvage it now, everything's fine. We've heard rock bottom type comments from Grimes. Grimes is switching up his placement. He's going up to the booth. Shreyas Lotta, we had yesterday, kind of talking about a lot of the things that we've talked about this week and where do you turn and what can you change and what can you do. And you know, he's talked to coaches. We mentioned nothing seems to be physical with Jalen Daniels. I don't know, but I know it needs to be fixed. And the tone of that game will be a fascinating one. How tight is KU playing? We could be having some of the same conversations and issues, Tommy, and they could be 3-0, right? Like that's what's crazy. Now, would that really change anything? I don't know that it would all that much. It doesn't like change the path or the outcome. The problems would still be the same problems if they have a couple of unlucky plays go their way. I don't want to say it's a good thing because it's obviously not a good thing. But any issues they have are being forced into the front right now early in the season. And it's just a matter of how quickly they can get it fixed.
I guess the one glass half full mentality that you can take with this whole thing is, at least they're figuring it out now, or at least trying to, through three weeks, as opposed to in November or, God forbid, December. You know, this is something that through three games, the expectations have not been met. Those expectations were very clearly laid out before the season started. Lance Leipold talked multiple times in the offseason about the expectations of this particular team this season and what he felt like their ceiling was and where he felt like he wanted to take them. And through three games, they haven't really come close to that, to be honest. And I think that what makes it so much more frustrating, and probably why Jayhawk fans everywhere are just overly irritable about all of this, is it was one thing when the team was really bad and you knew they were really bad and you didn't really have high hopes. You've seen enough of these players so many different times win and win at a higher level than really ever before, at least in the last decade and a half, that you begin to set some higher expectations. That's completely fair, completely normal. The fan base does it. The coaching staff does it. And I know that there's been, you know, probably some internal friction going on as they're trying to work their way through this. It's kind of been alluded to a few different times from, you know, whether it's the coaching staff with each other, coaching staff to players, players with each other, players back to the coaching staff, whatever it is, there's friction there, but it's growing pains with a new offensive coordinator. They've got to figure it out sooner rather than later. That's the key. It's not about whether or not they ever will, because I do think that they will, because Lance Leipold is too good of a coach. It can't continue. It can't take multiple weeks in the future to get it all worked out. You've got to get it handled now.
I think the quarterback position is always under a microscope. And I've tried to imagine, like, what if KU was 1-2 because their defense sucked, but Jalen Daniel was playing well? I think it would be a very different vibe. I think the reason there is panic, one of the biggest reasons there is panic, is because people are concerned, and I think it's a valid concern, that Jalen Daniels is not the same player. Because everything has ridden on that being the case, right? Like, that is the biggest part of this season, is that you have all of this, and he's finally back, right? And he has fallen so flat. I think that has been what's added to the desperation, because people in the back of their head or in the front of their head now are like, what if he's not back? Then what happens with this team? But again, the glass half full thing for me is that the defense has been really good, like really good. So it's changed. And I think they can reinvent themselves. They can, but they have to do it right now, right? They have to do it now. And it's a collective effort. It is a combination of Grimes and Daniels figuring something out, or something changing in that combination, obviously. But if they can stay motivated and they can continue to play good defense, like, it's what's so annoying about it is the two losses haven't allowed them room to grow, right? Like, you haven't allowed it. But over the course of a season, if they evolved into a run-heavy team that played good defense, you'd feel good about it in the growing pit, but you've lost these two games. But again, you start from zero now. It doesn't really matter. Look, good for you. And I was guilty of this. I was wrong. Like, was KU ever going to be an at-large team, which meant they were probably going to have one or fewer losses this year? Probably not.
I don't know. I mean, I think that there was the thought that they could, with their schedule, they could run the table and get in there as an at-large.
Yeah, yeah. That was probably foolish, but an optimist's take on things. And again, I was the one pushing that and hoping for it. It is far more realistic that their chance was always to win the Big 12. After everything we've seen, I am not of the belief that they have no shot at that. And I know, like, Saturday night late and Sunday morning, that was the or Saturday morning, I guess, late Friday night, that was the sentiment from, honestly, just about every Jayhawk fan I've talked to a ton, because I want to try to get the feel for this thing. But I don't think that's the reality yet. I think they still have an advantageous schedule. I think they have things happening for them that can lead you to a lot of wins. And does that mean they just have to be the second best regular season team in the league? Like, that's what they have to do. So could you see the run happening with two losses? Yeah, I think you still could. Again, the problems that we've talked about ad nauseum have to be fixed for that to occur, but it's not off the table for them to make it through the Big 12 schedule with two or fewer losses. It's not off the table at all.
Yeah, I mean, just going through their schedule, I mean, you would think that the home game against TCU next weekend should be a win at Arrowhead. It should be.
We can call it that still for now.
On the road at Arizona State should be a win in early October. Houston, I think, you know, all conventional wisdom tells you that should be a win in the middle of October, although Houston did hang with Oklahoma just a couple of weeks ago. So that, I mean, who knows? You know, from there, Colorado at home, Baylor on the road, both in late November, those should be wins. That basically leaves you with the game this weekend on the road at West Virginia, and they're a pesky team, especially in Morgantown. It leaves you with on the road in Manhattan against Kansas State in late October, at home against Iowa State, and on the road at BYU. Those would be the four games, and in any of them, obviously in the Big 12, can, you know, jump up and bite you, but right, those would be the four that I would circle as going to, you know, probably the toughest tests remaining on the schedule for the Jayhawks.
Let's not even look at it big, but let's chop it in half. Let's just look at the first four. At West Virginia, at Arizona State are your two road games. TCU and Houston are your two home games. I would tell you right now, and I know they're not favored, they're dogs on the road at West Virginia. KU, even if KU is not what we thought they'd be, they should be good enough to be 4-0 after four games.
They need to go 4-0 in these next four games.
They have to. They have to, or they're not going to do this. So, like that, you can look at it that way. And does that seem so far out of reach? No, it doesn't. That seems very attainable if they are just marginally better throwing the football, just a tiny bit better throwing the football, right? They could be 4-0. Let's just stop there for now, because after that, it does get dicier, right? At Kansas State, at BYU, at Baylor. At this point right now, you'd look at those and be like, I don't know that those are games they can win. At home against Iowa State is tough. Colorado's a wild card. So you don't look at any of the last five, because I think they're all coin flips at best and worse than that at worst. So just start with the first four. If they can get through the first four and they're 4-0 and they're playing a little better, throwing the ball, their passing game has found itself a little bit, then we can kind of start the conversation over again, right? Because again, it could be 3-0. If they don't have a couple of really at least 2-1, you think about the last blown coverage play of the first half against UNLV and the fumble thing. Like, those are fluky things. Illinois may be a little bit different, but even if it was 2-1, we probably aren't having these conversations. And the reality is, it doesn't really matter if they win or lose those games. Only thing that matters is they play better, and they have to throw the ball better, and they have to stop turning the ball over and let their defense win them games. How do you do that? You don't turn the dang ball over. That's how you let a defense win you a game.
Yeah, what's crazy is I don't know if you follow at all the ESPN SP Plus rankings, and everybody has these different sites have these predictive rankings on where these teams are as far as a bunch of different factors. The ESPN SP Plus rankings that they call predictive and forward facing, as of now, even as of this day after the UNLV loss a week ago, has Kansas as the number 30 team in America. It gives them the number 29 offense and the number 26 offense and the number 49 defense. So they're still putting the Kansas offense.
And again, that's predictive.
That's predictive, right? But it's still putting the Kansas offense fairly high in the country despite the turnovers. And you know, so kind of breaking that down and you know, interpreting what that means, to me, my interpretation of that is that all in all, the offense, everything combined, not just the passing game, but you add in the running game, you add in everything offensively, is fairly efficient. It's pretty effective. But again, they've turned the ball over. And so those turnovers, killed every single opportunity. But
I think it's also predicting what it should be, right?
Correct.
Like, it's like what it is when it's right, and it's not right now.
Yeah.
And that's why I think Jalen, like, there was a point going into this season where it's like, okay, Jalen Daniels coming off a back injury, got to protect him. I think that's out the window. Jalen Daniels with his legs, and he's never been a runner, but he can do it, needs to become a part of it, has to become a part of it, because there's a chance, and probably a pretty decent one, that the guys behind him are not ready, which I get that. But you can't keep running that out there either. So what can you do? You can make Jalen Daniels a different player. If he's not the same kind of thrower, and he hasn't been, then make him a runner. And now he still is a better option, right? Like, okay, like if we're not going to throw the ball well, let's run the ball, because we do have Devin Neal and Hyshaw. And the same thing that's making K-State successful with Giddens and Edwards and Johnson can be replicated with Kansas, with Daniels, with Hyshaw, and with Neal.
Yeah, assuming that Daniel Hyshaw is able to go this weekend. I've not gotten an update
big picture.
It's crazy. So there's a website, and I'm lifting all this information from social media, but there's a website, collegefootballdata.com. They do a bunch of analysis on every college football game. They do something called a post-game win expectancy. They take the entire body of work from the game that just finished. They put it all together, and they tell you who should have won the game based on all the different factors. In the UNLV game, it gave Kansas a 99% chance to win. That's despite the coaching and the quarterback play. Now, ultimately, the coaching and the quarterback play led to the loss. But despite all of that, it still gave the Jayhawks a 99% chance to win that game in spite of the issues that they ran into. So, again, you get into Big 12 play, it's going to be different competition than UNLV. It's going to be even different competition than probably Illinois. So, you know, those percentages are probably not going to be that high.
What makes it,
But at the same time, that I think that's what has fueled this frustration so heavily,
right,
is that these are games that absolutely they should have won. They were the better team. Everybody in that stadium at Children's Mercy Park on Friday knew that Kansas was the better team than UNLV. That's what makes it so frustrating.
It was the same thing against Illinois. They've so clearly been better, but they have made these mistakes. And so that's why I don't want to punt on this. That's why I think it's urgency that needs to be inserted right this second. If the current thing isn't working, this team is still better, is still good. Make some sort of change to fix it. Grimes going up to the booth is probably a bigger deal than we want to joke about, because these things matter to who's in Jalen Daniels' ear, familiarity, comfort levels, all those things. And at the end of the day, the bottom line is Daniels has to be a better thrower of the football. But maybe not throw it as often as we thought he was going to. Evolve. Run the ball. He's an effective runner when he does it. He hasn't always needed to, because he's such an accurate and effective passer. He ain't that right now. And I don't know what's going to change about that immediately. It'd be great. Look, I hope he comes out and throws 70%, and doesn't throw any picks, throws two touchdowns, and is this highly efficient passer we've always known Jalen Daniels to be. But that doesn't feel likely yet. So just run the ball. With him, too. Change what you do offensively. Completely throw everything else out the window and change it. You can go beat West Virginia in West Virginia. My goodness. Like, Kansas's expectation this year, they got first place votes to win the Big 12. You can go on the road and beat West Virginia, even as an underdog. Don't even care. There's a very high chance that Kansas is more talented than West Virginia is this year.
Real quick story. So almost a decade ago, I had the opportunity to go with the KU team. And this was back during the David Beatty era. I went with them on the team plane to Morgantown. They played at West Virginia. I had never been to West Virginia before, never been to Morgantown. That's the only time I've ever gone. I'm pretty sure the Jayhawks lost by about 40 that night. And, you know, credit to the West Virginia fans. Like, they were rockets. I know that there is a little bit of discontent going on with that program right now, with their head coach, and what might transpire moving forward. I've heard that, you know, if things get rough this weekend against the Jayhawks, there could be some uproar there in Morgantown. It's a hostile place to go and play. I know, I've been there before myself. It's going to be a fun atmosphere on Saturday.
And KU's got to go win the game. Just go do it. Go do it and wipe all this clean. They're 1-0 in the Big 12 and an impressive performance. We will not care what happened to UNLV and Illinois. Like, it will be a fresh start. So we'll see if they can do it. That does college football. We're going to come back. We're going to preview the Chiefs a little bit when we return. We got sound from Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes yesterday. They talked about the addition of Kareem Hunt. I thought it was interesting, the things that they said about Kareem Hunt. And we'll discuss that on the other side. It's all Brockton Caster. The IHOP hotline's open for you the rest of the way. 869-1240. Don't go anywhere. We'll come back. More Sports Daily right after this.
Dude, you gotta hear this.
Go ahead. I think I want to hear this.
Sports Daily is on KFH.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Sports Daily here with you on a Thursday. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster, alongside Jad Chambers, is producing things for us. If you've missed anything on the Odyssey app today, you can always go back and listen to it, with us. It's great podcast opportunity, too. You can just go back and check out the show, not just ours either, on the Odyssey app. There are tons and tons and tons of shows and great programming on there for you. You can leave us voice messages there. There's a little microphone. You just push it and join that way. But we appreciate you however it is that you take in the show. Also on these video streams, 12 News Connected, Facebook, YouTube X. The Chiefs yesterday talked about Kareem Hunt. It's first time we heard from Andy Reid, from Patrick Mahomes since they added Kareem Hunt. A couple of things became clearer. I think at least the people in the locker room have a good relationship with Kareem Hunt. After everything that's happened now 6 years ago, we know the Chiefs are a second chance team as far as players go, especially guys who have been a part of it. Andy Reid talked about how close Patrick Mahomes and Kareem Hunt are. They came in the same class. Kareem Hunt was at his wedding. They've stayed in touch. I think Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes are two examples of people who want the best for people, even when they've made mistakes. So that part of it is pretty easy, I think, for them to swallow. I thought what was interesting is how Andy Reid described Hunt. I've been the believer, and I still am, that Kareem Hunt's best days are far, far behind him. And if we see him in a significant role at any point for this team on Sundays, it will be not a good thing because it's meant Carson Steele / Samaje Perine has not been enough. I still think that Carson Steele and Samaje Perine can be enough, hopefully will be enough. And I know people want to discount Carson Steele, but again, I would remind you, Pacheco basically was presented this same opportunity as a seventh round pick in his rookie year and thrived in it. I don't see any reason that Carson Steele couldn't do the same thing because he reminds us of Isaiah Pacheco in the style of football that he plays, which is the style of runner that this offense is built around. That's why he's on this roster. But I do think when we heard from Andy Reid, he's talking about ramping Kareem Hunt. He's probably going to be a factor to some degree. And I think it really comes down to what Carson's, and maybe it's just depth still. But if you ask me who I think is more likely in 2-3 weeks to be a factor, Clyde Edwards-Helaire or Kareem Hunt, I would say at this point, I'd probably say Kareem Hunt. And how big a factor, I guess, is the question. But I've got confidence in Carson Steele. Isaiah Pacheco's a really good player. But man, we liked Carson Steele for a reason. And he's on this roster for a reason, and it's really one reason only, and it's because he is a bulldozer, hard-headed runner that can do exactly what the Chiefs need their running back to do. Is he the kind of pass catcher Isaiah Pacheco is? Time will tell. Can he handle pass blocking and assignments? Time will tell. But as far as just running the ball, which this team needs to do, he can do that. He should be able to do that. So that part of it, I think, doesn't change. But when you hear Andy Reid talking about yesterday, if you have a chance to listen to it, that gave me a feeling that it probably Hunt's going to be a factor of some kind. At whose disposal, I guess, becomes the question for me. Does he take significant work away from Steele and Perine, or does he just slide in as basically, and I think they added like Keontae Irving. That's probably a short-term thing. Like, does he slide into that third back role and get 3-4 touches a game? Maybe. Can he come in late in a game and strictly be a pass catcher and pass blocker. That could happen, but we got to remember Samaje Perine, they acquired, has been one of the not just good, he's been one of the best pass catching running backs in football the last few years. Like, that's his thing, and he does it really, really well. So keep that in mind. But Kareem Hunt, I think the sound was pretty, like, they're pretty intent, I think, on making him some part of the offense. We'll see to how much and to what degree. But it's the Carson Steele show, I would imagine, this week, and I hope he thrives in it because he's a fun player to watch. For the same reasons Isaiah Pacheco is a fun player to watch. We like their style. All right, we'll come back. We'll tell you what's on the network today. We'll put a bow on it here at Sports Daily. Don't go away.